All through the early morning hours of Monday, January 29, 1945, the Rangers stepped warily through a broad field of Kogan, the ubiquitous weed of the Philippines. Kogan grass afforded terrific cover, but it could also be a terrific nuisance. Each spike of coarse grass was as tall as a man and bore hundreds of silky hairs that made the Ranger's skin itch. Aside from its function as a thatching material, it was an agriculturally useless plant, inedible to humans and cattle alike. Still, it grew everywhere in the archipelago, cropping up like a sharp-eyed opportunist wherever old-growth forest was felled. The only effective way to get rid of Kogan was to burn it, and even now there were several brush fires smoldering somewhere in the distance, gauzing the night in an acrid haze. At daybreak, the long line of rangers and guerrillas stopped to rest in the barrio of Balin Karin. The rural village was just beginning to stir. The rangers could hear chickens clucking, the cheerful natter of Filipinas busily cooking breakfast over wood stoves. A few scabby gamecocks pecked in the dirt, strutting the tight orbits of their chains. As with every village they'd passed near, the Balin Karin dogs marched out to the edge of town to snarl at the rangers, sending up an unholy racket.
"Will somebody shut up those mutts?" Musi yelled.
Balin Karin was 5 miles north of the POW camp, too close to the enemy for the rangers' taste.
"From here on," Musi said, "we gotta get the locals to muzzle every last dog in the area. The Japs'll know something's up."
Soon the townsfolk emerged from their nipa shacks to hush the dogs. The people gathered around the rangers, offering ripe papayas and the partially incubated duck eggs known as balut. Bare-breasted women, some of them nursing children, came up without a hint of shyness and mingled with the men. They smiled at the tall Americans, studying their unfamiliar uniforms and their strange-looking guns, saying,
"Magandang umaga, salamat!"
Long live America. Just a few weeks before, Balin Karin had suffered a bloody reprisal from the Japanese army, apparently because the barrio had been harboring guerrillas. A group of soldiers from the Japanese garrison in Cabanatuan City had stormed in with tanks and shot up the place, killing a substantial number of guerrillas and a few civilians as well. The people in Balin Karin were uncomfortable talking about it, and it was unclear precisely how many had been murdered. Musi later reported in an article in the Saturday Evening Post that as many as 100 people were killed in the vicinity, though other accounts put the number closer to 20. When the subject came up, the villagers responded by smiling awkwardly and shaking their heads. All the rangers were able to learn was that something horrible had recently happened here. The people of Balin Karin were still obviously haunted by the tragedy, and not so quietly nursing revenge. Maybe this explained why they were so happy to see the rangers. They'd been around Yanks before, of course, but these were a different breed from 3 years ago. Bigger, it seemed, better armed, more confident, with a curious squash-yellow glow to their skin, the result of their daily intake of the new anti-malarial Atibrin. Over the past few weeks, the Filipinos had watched American planes vectoring overhead, and they'd heard the welcome wrath of American artillery. Yet this was their first look at flesh-and-blood American troops since the days of Bataan. The Emperor's army was on the run now, and the people in Balin Karin could sense by the swagger of these new Americans that it was only a matter of time. If the villagers were excited to see Musi's men, no one was the least bit surprised by their presence. The barrio already seemed to be well aware of the Rangers' mission. It was as though John the Baptist had passed through town several days earlier to herald their imminent arrival. Children, grandmothers, even the dogs appeared to know what was afoot. Musi was astonished and not a little miffed by this development.
"So I guess the cat's out of the bag," he snapped.
The last thing a ranger on assignment ever wanted was for his reputation to precede him. That this top-secret mission was now common knowledge seemed to mock all their assiduous efforts at stealth. Musi and Prince could only cross their fingers and pray the virus of common knowledge didn't spread to Japanese ears. More than ever, they had to trust in the rock-bed loyalty of the local people. During the early days of the occupation, the Nueva Ecija countryside had certainly known its share of Makapili, Japanese sympathizers, But now, with the tide so obviously turning in America's favor, the danger of collaborators seemed less likely.
I wasn't worried about informants, Prince later said. I figured a Quisling would have been pretty stupid by this point in the war. They knew we'd taken Leyte. They knew we were taking Luzon. They could see the writing on the wall.
It wasn't necessarily a question of informants, though. A breach might just as easily occur by accident. If a Japanese spy happened to be purposefully loitering around the rice granaries or the village market, one incautious remark among friends could precipitate disaster. Musi figured that if the Japanese got wind of the raid, by whatever means, they'd respond in one of two ways. Either their troops would try to ambush his men, or, just as likely, the Japanese army would simply hasten the timetable for a massacre at the camp, so that by the time the Rangers got there, the enemy would be long gone, and the feared slaughter would have already been accomplished.